the whole of justice.
Drip too hard, don't stand too close.
Hello, Sergeant Be Safe, Captain Chaos. I'm your new district attorney, Justin Case.
Hello, Justin Case. Nice to meet you.
Yes, it's a pleasure. I'm glad we're all on the same team.
Yes. Locking up bad guys. Let's go inside the courthouse and see the judge. We have bad guys to put away.
You are absolutely right. Let's go inside and get to work.
All rise. I am the Honorable Judge Mint.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Attorneys, present your closing arguments.
I'm a defense attorney, Scott Free, and my guys didn't do it.
The proof has been laid out, Judge. Sergeant Be Safe and Captain Chaos caught these guys red-handed.
What you mean, red-handed?
Order in the court!
I find these three guilty on all counts.
Ooh.
Well, I'm out of here.
I'm innocent. I didn't sell crap.
What do you mean guilty? I don't hack.
Good work.
Yes, job well done, team. I just want to say good job to our brand new district attorney, Justin Case. And from me and Captain Chaos, that's your tip of the day to get you on your way.
Hey, officer, your keys are in the door.
I follow you on TikTok. I've already seen this. By the way, you don't have your seatbelt on, sir. If you'll pull right up there for me.
Oh,
you. Oh, no. Please don't walk over here. Please, please, please don't. Oh, okay. Hi. How can I help you?
Welcome to Black and Blue, the podcast that brings you the untold stories behind the badge. Every week at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we dive deep into the lives of our unsung heroes, the first responders and law enforcement officers who put their lives on the line to protect us all. So join us as we humanize the badge. We shed light on the incredible individuals who wear it proudly. From rookies just starting out on their journey to seasoned vets with years of experience, even retirees who continue to make a difference in their communities. Come with us and discover the trainings that mold us. The unforgettable experiences that make us. Publications that inspire us to push forward. So buckle up and get ready to embark on a thrilling journey through the lives of those who protect and serve. This is the Heartbeat, Black and Blue. Black and Blue, where the stories behind the badge are true. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to another weekly episode of Black and Blue. I am your host.
I am your motivational speaker, your empowerment coach, your author, and your favorite baker's favorite baker. Some of you know me as Coach Clee. Some of you know me as The Coldest. Some of you know me as Clark Tent. Some of you know me as Clee Tillman. And on each and every platform, I am a various assortment of those names. Excuse me. We're streaming on 5 different platforms, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, 5. We're on 1 on LinkedIn, 2 on YouTube, and 2 on Facebook. So make sure you tag, like, and share whichever platform that you're on. I see Ben Gaynor was already on. I put his comment up there on the screen. He's the voice of Captain Chaos, if you guys didn't already know that. And I got to, let me change up the website of this banner going on below. This is Black and Blue, where we air at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time weekly. And when we go live with a first responder or someone who's in law enforcement, whether they're rookie, seasoned, or retiree. And we talk about their trainings, their experiences, and their publications. And we've had a tremendous group of lives all the way up to this year, and we're going to continue to move forward today. I got a special guest in the background. Some of you may know him, others of you may not. I learned more about him today just talking to him backstage than I did before we actually worked around to have our live for tonight. And I apologize for those of you that did not know we were going live tonight, because in the advertisement, I did advertise for tomorrow, and I legitimately thought all the way up until about 4 o'clock today that the live was for tomorrow, and I was already set up for tomorrow. And then I looked at the schedule and saw that it's for tonight, because the guest called me and just wanted to reconnect and make sure we're still on for tonight. And I said, yeah, we're good. And I double checked and I said, wow, we had to hurry up and push this thing through. And so here we are. We're going to have a lot of fun. I'm excited to be live tonight. Make sure that you get your questions ready. Make sure you get your comments ready. This is a live interview, like I said, and this is going to be a live interaction. Since we're on those 5 different platforms, I can't see who's on here. So if you're looking for a shout out, you got to put your name and where you're from in the comment section, and you'll get that shout out that you're looking for. If you have a question, you have to put that in the comment section as well, and we'll address it as soon as we can. Understand there's about a 5 to 10 second delay from the time that you post something to the time that we see it. So we'll get to it as soon as we can. All right. And we want to keep that algorithm going. Those likes are free. So everyone, make sure you hit the like button, whether you're watching now or whether you're watching the replay. All right. This is sponsored. This platform, Black and Blue, is sponsored by workwithclee.com. One Way Publishing, that's the website, workwithclee.com. If you ever wanted to do a voiceover for Certain BC, that's how you would want to do that. If you ever wanted to be on the show, be sitting in the hot seat on the platform, go ahead and reach out to workwithclee.com. It's scrolling below, and it's also in the comments section. One Way Publishing is a book publishing company, first and foremost. The books behind me, I wrote 5 of them, and they have many more clients that wrote books from there itself. So their motto is they can turn a mere thought into a book that's bought. So if you ever wanted to be a published author and you didn't know how to do that, contact One Way Publishing. They can make that thing happen. The latest 2 books, one is a poetry book by Kay Childs, and she's been wanting to be a published author, and she wrote her book over 20 years ago and didn't know what to do or how to get it published. She finally reached out to One Way Publishing, and that thing is on Amazon right now. Make sure you guys go get your copy. It's her personal book of poetry that she wants to share with the world. Also, dynamic duo, mother and daughter, Shayla and Sophia Thompson, wrote their first children's book, To Be So Tall. They've done assemblies. They've done church visits. They've done so many different things, book signings with their children's book that is also hitting waves. The book is right here. It's also behind me. It's also available on Amazon. So make sure you guys check them out. And if you're looking to have yours published as well, make sure you reach out to One Way Publishing. All right. That's enough grifting. I know you guys aren't here for that, but we got to get those announcements out there, because One Way Publishing sponsors the platform. And like I said, I'm Coach Clee, and Clee is spelled C-L-E-E in the same way as continuing law enforcement edutainment, because we educate and we have fun here, and we're going to entertain as well while we do that. But who we got? Ellie loves the book. There we go. Ben Gaynor has a copy of the book. She loves it, the book as well. We got another comment. Great book, of course. Thanks for promoting. Absolutely, absolutely. One Way Publishing is a sponsor, so we got to put anything that One Way Publishing puts out, we got to put that information out there. All right, but without further ado, we're going to change gears. Let me change this banner so you guys know what's up, what's coming up. Damn. and get this banner up here. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we got a special guest in the background. I'm going to bring him to the stage momentarily. He's got over 27 years in law enforcement and law enforcement experience. He retired as a sergeant out on the West Coast. I'll let him name the department if he so chooses so. He's the founder of Critical Incident Review, LLC, his personal business brand and company, where he's an expert and a trainer, and he does expert trainings and also consultations. And what I just found out, he's also traveled with many bands that you may be aware of, and he's a musician as well. And we're going to jump into all that momentarily here. I'm going to bring him to the stage. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to introduce Jamie Borden. Jamie, are you there?
I am, Clee.
Perfect, perfect. Hey, thank you for making yourself available and coming on the show. We got your website scrolling below. I'm looking to jump into this interview with you. Got a decent number of people in here. We love the Gainers. Shayla's on there. Talk about the Gainers. Absolutely. But jumping into this, Jamie, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, so I started my career in law enforcement late 96, was in the academy in 1997. I had a great time. I loved every single day, everything that I did as a law enforcement officer. I was patrol, field training officer, bicycle squad, you know, all of the standard stuff out here on the West Coast, where it's warm enough to actually ride a bike for the majority of the year, which I don't think you probably get to experience.
No.
But and like you said, I'm a musician as well. And the reason I bring that up is because there's a lot of crossover between being a musician, especially someone who is a practiced individual. That has a lot to do with the tie-in and a lot of the stuff that I brought into the department as a training officer first, and then a sergeant in the training bureau. And I know you had Danny King on the show some weeks ago. Me and him worked together for many years, and we continue to work together to this day. So, in a nutshell, that's it. I was a police officer for a long time. I started my career as an engineer, building roadways, structural engineer, and I hated every minute of it. I hated numbers. I hated the smell of asphalt. I hated all of it. But I optimized that time. And by the time I was probably 25, 26 years old, I'd gone on a tour through Russia and a lot of the states in Vienna and through Europe with a rock group, and took some time off. When I came back from that, I decided that I was no longer going to do anything I didn't want to do, and that was being an engineer. So I tested for the Metropolitan Police Department here in Las Vegas, and I tested for the Henderson Police Department. I got hired with both, and fortuitously, I chose to go with Henderson. And a lot of that, ironically, was because my brother, who was also a law enforcement officer with Metro, said, "Hey, choose Henderson. It's a smaller department. You're not just a number. You're a human being, and they recognize you for your efforts. And if you do put the time in, you're gonna be recognized more there for that." And he was right. I became passionate about certain aspects of my work, and I pushed hard in that area. And I retired happy. And that's more than I can say for a lot of folks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I got Dr. Travis Gates, former guest on the show, commenting, "Jamie is the man, only rivaled by..."
Dr. Yates.
Yep.
Good to hear from you, brother.
Absolutely. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate it. He's a good man. I had a lot of fun with him on the show. But let's talk about, like we talked about backstage, before we jump into the meat and potatoes of the interview, let's talk about life after retirement. I know you sparked on it. While engineering, you didn't like the smell of asphalt, and you decided that you wanted to live a life of things that you absolutely wanted to do and were passionate with. What are you passionate about now that it's kind of a segue away from law enforcement?
Well, so, and here's the crazy thing about it, Clee, is I never segued away from law enforcement. I have been playing cops and robbers and rock star since I was 8 years old. I've just got everyone bullshitted enough to pay the bills while I do it. So, the thing that I've done and my transition into retirement, I never took the job to retire. I never looked at my retirement. I never knew how much time I had in. I didn't care. I was a worker. I enjoyed the job. We had some regime changes at the Henderson Police Department, where I retired from out here, sister department to Metro. Mm-hmm. And those regime changes had an effect on me. The hard work that my colleague Danny King, brother at arms and friend for many, many years, and I did a lot of work to keep that department, to keep the morale up, and it was an engineering feat in and of itself. Okay. And we were successful with that. We had officers that were making good decisions. Their competence was backed by confidence. Nice. And that came from being part of a training heavy department, which, you know, myself and Danny and the team that I had working with me at that time. And although I retired as a sergeant, that was a tough gig to be a sergeant in, because nobody ever worked for me. We always just worked together. So I was considered a leader, but I was a leader among leaders. And that was an absolute blessing in terms of, you know, how I left the department. Mm-hmm. So in the transition, it was a very smooth transition, although a tumultuous exit because of, you know, what I was dealing with the regime change. Uh-huh. I made the decision I wasn't going to fight for my position. It wasn't worth it. We created the position for the police officers on that department. And so I wasn't going to turn it into a fight for me. And I was told by the chief at the time I had two choices, which I rapidly responded with, "You have no idea how many choices I have. And shame on you for thinking you know me well enough to think you know what my choices are." And you know, at that point, Clea, I chose, I could either go back out on the road and run a squad, which is the single best job on the planet, or I could retire and continue to do what I was doing and have an impact on the nation and the nation of law enforcement. The mm-hmm. people that have signed up to do this job, people like yourself that have taken the oath to do the right thing at the right time for the right reasons, are the people I stand for. And although, and listen, it's calling balls and strikes. The unfortunate reality is I've had cases against police officers, and that's a natural, it's natural calling of the herd. I've been accused of being here to protect cops, and I'm not. I'm here to protect law enforcement, and to protect law enforcement, we have to call balls and strikes. Not every human being is without fault. However, the difference between malevolent, reckless behavior is very different than an unexpected or an undesirable outcome based on critical moments in an incident where the officer has not all the information. They don't know everything that's about to happen. Right. So their decisions are based on their reasonable experience at that moment. Well, you know, I'm here to protect law enforcement in that fashion, and I've been doing that since the day I retired. And it's been very gratifying. It's tough. It's not easy, especially when we have to call out those who are putting a black eye on law enforcement. And I would tell you this, you know, we expect people to take this job, that take the oath, to invest in themselves, train, understand what it is that you're doing, do the studying that it requires, understand things like Graham versus Connor, know your policies. Don't just sign off on the fact that you had to read them in a briefing training. That doesn't save you in any fashion. Right. But don't expect that policy is going to save you because you know it. It doesn't matter. And you know, one of the things I teach in my investigations class in assessing this information is that performance cannot be measured by policy when it comes to a use of force. And the big mistake that is made in departments around this country is that a use of force policy, where the core component is Graham versus Connor, is used to judge the officer's behavior. And that's what Graham versus Connor stands for. It is not a decision platform. You can't teach an officer how to make an objective decision because they don't have objective information. They don't have a crystal ball to know the outcome. They have to make a decision based on the information they know in the context that they are experiencing it. And that may be inaccurate, but it's not a bad faith decision. It's a decision made in good faith based on what they're experiencing in that moment. That is not covered by policy. The policy is a hindsight analytic to judge an officer's actions in hindsight to be determined as to whether it's reasonable or its level of appropriateness based on policy. The objective standard and the decision on using reasonable force is the purview of the jury and the trier of fact, not that policy. And there's an intense analysis that goes along with that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you. Thank you. Absolutely.
I bet you're sorry you asked that question.
No, I think you had a lot of great information just so with that dissertation right there, and I appreciate it. You opened the door right into the question I was going to ask anyway, which was basically, how did you get involved in critical incident reviews and becoming an expert?
I don't know. And I'm quite frankly, you know, I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out how it is that I got to the place that I am. And, you know, you've heard of the Dunning and Kruger effect where you have this imposter syndrome. Listen, man, I was a knuckle dragging drive fast with the blue lights cop. That's what I was. I enjoyed my job on the road. I enjoyed protecting the community. I enjoyed interacting with good guys and bad guys. I enjoyed that job. It was gratifying. I look back at what I did. I look back at the work I put in. I never had a plan to be who I am today. I ended up being this person. I've accepted that, and I'm done trying to figure out the calculation that put me here. And I'll boil it down to this: commitment. And there's no other component that's more important to committing to what it is that's important to you. That will carry you through life. Forget about retirement, right? You know, I think I've worked harder in retirement than I ever did as a sergeant. And I thought I worked pretty hard as a sergeant. And until I got into retirement and I was, you know, sustaining myself with the company that ended up coming into reality. And it's all for, in my opinion, for my dedication and my commitment to this job that this runs in people. This is a position in life that runs in your blood. I don't care if a police officer goes into retirement, their blood still runs blue. And what you do with it is your decision. And I've just opted to keep working. I don't idle well. I'd be more trouble to this community if I didn't have anything to do, trust me, than I am in this position. So, you know, to shorten that extremely convoluted answer is I just committed to what was important to me. And I've never looked back. I've never stepped aside and thought, I'm not happy with doing this in my life. I travel incessantly. And you know what? I look forward to traveling. I look forward to being at home. So I've got the best of both worlds. Yeah. And thank God I do, because I do an enormous amount of traveling, but I interact with people like you every single day. So I don't feel like I've retired. I feel like I've repositioned. I'm doing the same exact thing as I was doing when I retired. Myself and Danny King as well, we worked together at the department. We're doing the same work together today. He's got AmericanPatrolman.com, outstanding instructor. We get to work together a lot. We've taught together before. He helps me with CIR. I don't know how much help I am to him, an American patrolman, because I'm busy, but I have a lot of respect for the things that he's doing in retirement. And here's the thing, I have to maintain a high standard, not for myself, but to not let down those people that believe in me and what I'm doing. And, you know, there's a very small circle of those people, attorneys and police officers in retirement, police officers on the street that I go to trial for in rapid succession. And it just, you know, it's very gratifying. And I ended up here because it's what I love to do, brother. I've got no other explanation.
You can see the excitement coming through. So there's no doubt that you don't love doing this at all. And to be doing it for a total career and then to actually retire and still do it now in a different capacity. I like how you said you didn't really retire, you repositioned. And that for all those listeners out there that are on the verge of retirement, you see the light at the end of the tunnel. This is what we're talking about, repositioning, always having something, a plan or something to look forward to. So you're not just going into retirement and mellowing out and fizzling and fading away to non-existence.
Yeah. And I think what you're seeing more in me is the coffee that I drink all day long. So no, but it's you're right. And I've seen officers that retire with no real plan about what they want to do. And, you know, a lot of those folks that we see retire with nothing to do really didn't do a lot on the job. And that's not to, that's not a dig at anyone. But in this climate, it's very easy to take a step back and let the world pass you by. Because if you look sideways or you do anything that can be scrutinized, you end up on the hot seat. And that's an, it takes an enormous amount of fortitude to withstand that. So to every officer that's out there that's listening tonight, I would say that I commend you for staying in the saddle in this job under the climate that you're forced to work in today. And there, I'm not the only one that has this position. There's many, many people that do what I do. And I'm going to tell you that make good decisions for the right reason at the right time. Mm-hmm. And again, for the right reasons. And there are people out there that will support you. It's not easy. My brother was sued in 92. He lost his family. He lost his home. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it was completely, he was exonerated of all charges. The courts found in his favor at the Supreme Court level. So I have Supreme Court decisions in my family name. And I was with my brother for that entire process. Mm-hmm. And I watched all of this happen. I remember telling him, it was 93. I hadn't even become a police officer yet. I told him, if I've ever got anything to do with officers that go through this, they'll never go through it again. I remember saying that. And I didn't remember it until about 2 years ago when I was on the podium. And I thought, shit, I better be careful what I wish for because it's coming down the pipe.
Wow. Interesting. You got true tremendous experience before you were in law enforcement itself. So your website's scrolling below. If anyone would go to the website, what should they expect or what would they see or what if they don't know anything about you, what would they learn from going to the website and taking one of the trainings or anything like that?
So at Critical Incident Review, I've developed four core classes, the Enhanced Force Investigations course, which really focuses on the global process in these investigations and the shortcomings. And I want to make sure that there's a delineation between mistakes and systematic failures, because a failure is sometimes based on not knowing what you don't know. And if you're not exposed to this information, and I've had magnificent experiences in retirement as an expert. And one of the primary reasons that I developed these courses is because as an individual that was tasked with reviewing and doing a complete analysis of the existing investigation, I was seeing over and over and over again the mistakes or the failures, not malicious failures, not because someone was not skilled, but because they didn't know what they didn't know at the time the investigation was occurring. Missing information, poorly written reports, an inability to articulate what occurred in the incident, using mechanical language, police legalese, the subject made a furtive movement. I used a department-approved takedown and put the subject in handcuffs. And you hear that and you think you know what happened, but that terminology in a report doesn't tell you anything. Right. It's not, it can't even be considered hearsay in a court case. So if that's not on video, then the officer comes in an internal review or an IA investigation or a deposition. And they ask, well, what was this? Listen, we're 24 to 48 months to even longer away from this event. If it wasn't written down, me and Danny had a discussion about this, and it's actually on our website. There's a blog section there where a lot of these discussions are available for officers and anyone involved in law enforcement at any level can really get an idea about how important these components are. So that first class, the Enhanced Force Investigations course, is about the global process and how human performance principles, scientific principles that can be applied, that need to be applied to these investigations, how they're applied to these investigations, and what they mean as the investigation comes through to fruition. Understanding that accuracy is fleeting. We aren't going to get accurate information. We aren't going to get it from the video. We're not going to get it from a statement, and we're not going to get it from a witness. Very rarely are we even going to get it from the physical or forensic evidence on the scene. What we do get is a complete data set that we can then triangulate components of that information together to arrive at totality of facts and circumstances known in hindsight, not known to the officer at the time of the incident, but known in hindsight. We have to substantiate what an officer's reasonable belief was in that. But we don't know what that was if we don't get complete information in that investigative process. And if we overlook things like human performance factors, decision processes, policies that officers were familiar with, training that they've received, tenure on the street, what experiences they've had. And we very rarely do we know any of that information. So everything that an expert says in hindsight, it runs the risk of being speculative. And that is a dangerous, dangerous area. It's damaging to these cases at when they come to fruition, especially at the civil level, where, and I don't want to take importance away from the criminal side because officers' freedoms are on the line. First, think about that. The very first initial investigation that happens is of a criminal nature. Well, this information has got to be complete. We only get one chance to get this data saved and documented properly. Without it, we run into a scenario where speculations are being made, and it's not an easy battle to fight at that point. I refuse in my reports and my analysis to speculate what an officer believed. I cannot do that because I don't know. It's got to be a statement from an officer supported with video evidence, supported with physical evidence before I can make a statement about the occurrence. Otherwise, it is pure speculation. And at the end of this, it's costing departments, municipalities and insurance carriers millions and millions of dollars. And it's tough to watch this happen. I'm seeing nuclear settlements on cases where officers made reasonable decisions. The narrative was just out of control. The emphasis and effort wasn't put into it at the very onset of the case. And now they fight the battle as if they have no idea what the battle even is. And it's deafening to watch. It's disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how you say it reminds me of a scenario a football coach used to say to me: if you sweat now, the game will be easy. If you want to relax during practice, then the game's going to be difficult. Same thing Justin Doyle put up here, and I was going to touch on it as well. Good report writing is critical. Shout out to you. Thank you, Justin, for the comment, tag, like, and share. Early on, especially younger officers or officers that aren't as seasoned, you kind of want to get the report out of the way so you can move on to the next thing. And like you said, you don't know which one's going to be the one. Most times you don't know which incident's going to be the most damning. And then you come back to it already months later. And then by the time you go through all the trial prep and everything else, you could be a year down the road and you're looking at a report that has two paragraphs when you know it should be a full page or two page report, very detailed. And if you have those details in there, it helps you. Whatever you front load helps you out on the back end.
That's right. And not only do you have a year to two, sometimes longer, you also have thousands of other contacts. And I would task any officer to tell me about the details of an event that happened yesterday. And because they've got family, they've got other things that occupy mind space. We don't store data like a camera. We store data to interpret, to make decisions in the moment. And as soon as we're done making that decision, oftentimes that information is filtered out, never to be remembered again, unless we write it down. And our officers have heard that. If you didn't write it down, it might as well not have happened. And that's one of the mantras that I remembered learning in the academy. That's one of the other classes we have is the report writing component for our boots on the ground. So, officers that are on the street, they have to understand that they've got limitations. They have to understand those limitations so that they can address those limitations at the point that the report is written or the statement is being given. Whether it's and I'm not a fan of written statements being given to attorneys in these critical incidents because it becomes a reconciliation for the purposes of prima facie self-defense, something of that nature. Well, listen, the episode's not over yet, right? That's the beginning. That's the first episode of 10 episodes that end up in a civil trial. And the officers are going to be under scrutiny and living with that for months, possibly years. And if a good report can minimize or mitigate that, then let's start writing good reports. And it's not about using terms that you learned in the academy. Get away from that. Forget about what you've learned. You're a human being, right? Write what happened. What is your department approved takedown? If your apartment approved takedown is a blade arm to the jaw, then write that down, because that's going to be a component of the lawsuit. If it was reasonable, write it down. And you know, reasonable is not your purview, but if this was necessary and required force at the time, and this is what you used, and it was a successful outcome, please get that information on paper, right? Get that down. Super important, which leads us to the next class that we've got, which is a forensic video review and examination course, which I've got a very deep line of experience in dealing with the video component. And the video component is very frail. It shows a distorted digital representation of an officer's reality in the moment. I just did an interview with a Des Moines, Iowa news agency about that, with a video that came out on an officer using force where someone was injured. Well, listen, when officers use force, someone's going to be injured. Could be the officer, and it might be the suspect. They have a vote in these incidents, right? Compliance is a really great idea. And the problem is compliance looks different on video than the officers are experiencing in the field. It's a very different environment. The video in and of itself is a very frail piece of evidence that cannot be used as standalone evidence in any of these cases. Okay. But I know you can tell me of multiple incidents where somebody's reviewed a video and said, I've seen everything I need to see, and they make a decision on that video. That's it. You would not find a shell casing, put a cone around that shell, and say, I can tell you everything that happened in that case from where that shell casing is sitting. And it's one piece of evidence. It tells one piece of the story. Let's get all of the evidence. Let's triangulate that evidence, and let's get a full, comprehensive, complete set data set about that incident in place. And it's not going to be accurate. You're going to ask officers questions. They're going to see things that didn't happen, and they're going to remember things or not remember things that did happen, right? And those things are not necessarily going to align between the officer's statement and what the video shows. It doesn't make it a lie. It doesn't make it unreasonable. That is simply a human performance factor that has to be considered. The last class that we have is an executive command level perspective to force analysis. What is it that you're seeing in these force analysis cases? What are you expecting from the investigation? And how are you reaching conclusions at an internal level based on the evidence that's provided to you? What language is being spoken by your investigators? What language do you understand? Do you understand, as an executive commander or middle upper management, what Graham versus Connor means? Do you understand what the totality of facts and circumstances known at the time means? It's not the totality of circumstances and facts known to those making decisions in hindsight. That's not what Graham versus Connor states. It's known at the time and reasonably believed. So those classes are extremely important for every level of officer, midline management, sergeants and lieutenants, and upper command staff, to understand the language across the board.
Thank you. Very descriptive, very detailed. Make sure, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you guys check the website out and subscribe or enlist, enroll to any classes he may be giving. It's very important. He just explained all the different levels of classes and the importance of them. But before we go any further, we're going to jump to a Sergeant Be Safe cartoon commercial, and we're going to jump right back. So make sure you stand by, and we'll be right back.
Hey, bro, we got next game.
Bro, what's going on?
We got this pickup game we're about to get started.
I got a bag full of treats.
Come on, man. Don't nobody want your treats.
Treats? What kind of treats?
Vapes, pills, and drugs.
Whoa, what do you mean?
Don't tell your parents.
Looks like I'm right on time. What's going on here?
There, Sergeant, be safe. I gotta get a picture.
Oh man, be safe.
Treacherous Tony, we know you're up to no good. What's in that bag right there?
What bag?
Sergeant, be safe. It's his drugs. He tried to sell it to us.
Thanks, big guy, for letting me know.
You're welcome.
You kids get out of here.
Treacherous Tony, drop the bag and come over here.
You'll have to catch me first.
Don't run, or you're gonna get tased.
All right. Taser, taser, taser.
All right. All right. All right. I give up. I won't do it again.
That's right. Your drugs will be disposed of. So put your hands up. You're coming with us.
I'm sick of going to jail.
Listen up, kids. Don't use drugs, vapes, or pills. They're not good for you. And that's your tip of the day. It gets you on your way.
And there it is. Gotta love Sergeant Be Safe, but we are back. We're back in the studio, back on Black and Blue. We had special guest Jamie Borden, and we've been talking about his website, been talking about critical incident reviews, talking about the different classes he has to offer. I want to talk about, if you can, any positive, negative, neutral cases that you've experienced that you can share with us about doing any kind of reviews, any kind of critical incident reviews. You hear me? Uh-oh. Thank you. Are you muted? You're muted. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that. That's called brain dead. For those of you that need the clinical term. Can you hear me now? You got me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, good. Yeah. So that's an interesting question. So you're talking about controversial use of force cases, and this is one of the components that's really important to discuss. What is it that makes a controversial case? I've had cases where departments are being sued because the handcuffs were too tight. And I'm talking about nuclear demands in these cases. I've had cases where, 46 shots have been fired for a subject that didn't have a firearm in his hand. And all of that comes down to the context of what's being dealt with by these officers in the scene. And one of the big components of the Enhanced Force Investigations course is identifying context and contextual environment, or the task environment that the officers are working in. Mm-hmm. The most controversial cases that I've had, in my opinion, remember that controversy is a label that's put on these cases by the media or by someone internally in the department that may be risk averse because the video doesn't look good. And now they're trying to reconcile that with the officer's behavior. And they say things like, we will hold the officer accountable for these, and this is normally before any investigation has occurred. So most of the cases that I've handled, because they're calling me as an expert, I'm one of probably a handful of experts that have my line of expertise and an understanding of the application of scientific principles to these components and to these cases. And the Danny, he had to do it. He had to do it. So yeah, no workout tips for Danny King. Except for don't eat Cheetos while you're on the treadmill, Danny. I saw you. The controversial part is really in the eyes of the beholder, right? So I've had cases that have on their face they're very hard to look at because of what the video evidence shows. They're hard for individuals to understand how it could potentially or possibly be considered reasonable based on what the narrative is. The narrative is what makes these cases controversial, and it depends on who gets to the narrative first, right? It's when an officer is being placed on administrative leave for a homicide investigation. Well, remember that sounds like an extremely controversial case. Right. But remember that homicide is not a term that requires criminal elements. Homicide is a manner of death. A homicide is the death of a human being where there was another human being involved. Well, that homicide investigation is because an officer was placed in a position to have to use deadly force or force that is expected to cause great bodily harm, substantial bodily harm, or death. And so how that narrative is is breached and put out into the public through social media channels or the news or whatever it might be, creates the appearance of extremely controversial cases. Mm-hmm. And then it just grows from there. So it's not to say that we need to get out and control the narrative, but we have to get the narrative out concerning the facts sooner the better, right? Because anything after a factual rendition of the narrative, everything after that becomes chasing the tail, right? If somebody's trying to create a negative narrative, it's not to say that they can't, but the original narrative already exists in some form. Mm-hmm. So it's you know, like I said, I've had extremely controversial cases because they were big in the media. Mm-hmm. But some of those cases were the least controversial cases in terms of the officer's behavior. You know, you look at the Memphis case where the officers were involved in the beating of the individual that ended up dying a couple days later. That's an extremely mm-hmm. controversial case. Yeah. You know, I'm not exactly certain. I've lost touch with that case, but in terms of controversy, that would be a controversial case because there's a lot of backstory that a lot of people don't know and understand about that case. Yeah. And what I would recommend to everybody is that when you hear of a case that's taking on the stigma of a controversial case, figure more out about it. Ask for the file. Call for a FOIA request and get the information on that case. If it sounds that terrible, the chances are that it may not be. There may be contextual issues. There may be, you know, reasonable beliefs in that case that if you don't know the backstory, I can tell you, I show a video in one of my courses and the entire room, a room full of 185 trained observers, officers that understand the application of force. They see the video and I ask them how they feel and everybody's shaking their head. Man, that looks awful. I would have never done that. The officer should have never done that. The officer could have, would have, or should have. Mm-hmm. So what we get into is a mechanistic kind of thinking or a counterfactual reasoning to the actual case. Right. I add one component to that case. Just one statement that I make about that video that I show, and the entire room to the tune of 100% all of a sudden understand why the officer did what he did with no question. Oh, okay. That makes sense. Then it's not extreme. Mm-hmm. And nothing has changed except for the narrative. And that's an important exercise for our officers. You see it, and that video is an emotional conductor. Mm-hmm. That video strikes a chord in you because you're interpreting information at a very surface level. You don't know what was driving the officer's decisions. A colleague of mine that I worked with for a couple of years by the name of Dr. Paul Taylor, and you know, he turned me on to a lot of the human factors research books that I'm reading now. Sidney Decker, Eric Holnagel, Woods, there's a list of these authors that really quantify these things. Sidney Decker has a saying that is very important. It's not why the use of force doesn't make sense to us. It's why the use of force made sense to the officer at the time. We don't need to reconcile that to where it makes sense to us as investigators. We need to understand why it made sense to the officer. Mm-hmm. Only then can we start heading down that pathway of analysis and evaluation and assessment, which is very different than a critique. A critique is a surface review in many cases of, I wouldn't have done that, the officer should have. Now that isn't to say that we can't develop learning points about critiquing at a surface level an mm-hmm. incident. There are things we see that might be good training fodder. However, without that full analysis and knowing what the officer was thinking in those moments and the background, the things that the video does not show, things like emotion, things like the history of the subject, the information the officer was perceiving and why, all of those things add up to evidence in the case. And we don't know that without talking to the officer or reading the officer's statement. Right. So in those types of cases, I would caution people to be aware of what is appearing to be controversial and do some research. It may actually be controversial, but I still have yet to see one that is as controversial as the narrative has made it out to be.
I love it. I love it. I know we in law enforcement talk about it all the time, and not to oust anyone or any media, social media, but it's kind of like the court of public opinion. As soon as it jumps on it, whatever they jump on, that turns out to be, okay, well, that's the first thing they said. That's the first thing everyone witnessed. It must be true. And then we jump into it, like you said, at the back end of it, trying to show how innocent we are, when realistically, it's the media's job to be dramatic. It's the media's job to be controversial, because that's how they get their views. That's how they stay afloat and stay popular. We all know that. So therefore, if they're putting that information out, we should be putting the information out as well, like you said, or asking the right, having those ask the right questions on getting the right background, getting the totality of the circumstances, getting the full picture. Like you said, the video is one piece of evidence, but then understanding what led up to this video, what happened after this video, what kind of investigations are going on, what was the original call for?
Exactly. And here's one of the mantras I've developed for the classes that I teach. And this is extremely important. There's a difference between educating and explaining and excusing and advocating. If we aren't ahead of the narrative, we immediately take on the persona of trying to excuse or advocate the police officer's behavior. If we provide an education about things like scientific principles, human performance factors, training implementations, how conditioned officers are or are not, remembering that the critical incidents that people are seeing in these so-called controversial incidents are incidents that the officers have probably never experienced. Mm-hmm. They haven't had training that specifically addresses the issues that the officer was dealing with. Mm-hmm. So how much experience and how much conditioning or heuristic has been developed in those moments that the officer is making decisions facing the consequences of life and death under the constraints of time in a nearly impossible environment. It's a very chaotic environment in most of these cases. So you consider all of these components, right, that an officer's dealing with. It's our goal to educate and explain, and I would rather do it before a critical event. That's where the podcasts are important, getting an education out to individuals about video, about the officer's ability to perceive certain things, how much is filtered out of that environment, that the officers aren't necessarily liars because their statement doesn't match the video. These are things that I've had cases. One of the most controversial cases in outcome that I've had was over a subject that was tased, handcuffed, and taken to the hospital and released. He wasn't even arrested. And that turned into a lieutenant losing his job for 2 years, wow, having to work at a Home Depot to make money to support his family. And 2 years later, in a bench trial, was exonerated of all charges. And it was all based around the components of human factors, decision-making, what the video showed and what the statements reflected. And all of it was legit. If they'd have looked for the completeness rather than the accuracy in that case, none of it would have happened. And the terrible thing about it is it was initiated from internally, from inside of the department, for somebody who didn't like what they saw on the video and that it didn't match. So automatically the officer is doing something malicious or malevolent by hiding something with no purpose. He didn't arrest the person. He was gotten his medication. He was taken into custody. The taser was used on him twice. He was not hurt. And he was taken to the hospital and released, no less. And this turned into an extremely controversial environment for the police officer, the community, and that department. And it could have been avoided by simply understanding the frailties of video evidence, understanding the frailties of human perception and focus of attention, the frailties of report writing and aligning what occurred with what's shown on video. These kinds of components that are missing in nearly every case that I get as an expert will mitigate these scenarios. So it's controversy is in the eyes of the beholder, and we are fighting the battle right now because we don't control the narrative. The narrative is out there before these incidents happen. So educate, explain, don't have the appearance of advocating and excusing an officer's behavior. And that is 100% up to us in law enforcement.
Yeah. Got a comment on the floor from Von Klein. I apologize if I said your name incorrectly.
That's Von Klein. He's a brother at arms, and law enforcement is better to have him. Thanks, Von. It's good to see you, brother.
It's great to see these issues are getting such great exposure from a top expert. Thank you for your comment. And thank you for the correction on the pronunciation of his name.
He'll hunt you down, Klee. Yeah, hey. He takes that stuff personal. I'm kidding, man.
Got Seti P on here saying good evening. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure you tag, like, and share. He's one of the voices on the Sergeant Be Safe cartoons as well. He was just on the last one. You might have heard him getting yelled at, or you might have heard him yelling.
Nice.
I put him out there like that. But I want to jump it back into the lieutenant who lost his job for 2 years and then finally exonerated. What kind of effect does it have on an officer or first responder like that to actually have to mentally go through those 2 years and physically and monetarily works on the his family? I can empathize what goes on, but I really don't understand it because I didn't actually physically go through it.
Well, so it's two-pronged. First of all, understand that you don't have to be an officer to be pulled into this environment of ultra scrutiny. I mean, this is a lieutenant, right? This is and not only a lieutenant, a decorated lieutenant who did wonderful things for his community for 24 years. And I will tell you this, having gone through a similar situation with my brother, it's devastating. And even though after 2 years, he gets his job back, even if he got back pay and all his retirement and all of his seniority and all these things, what do you think that's doing? Is that going to repair what this officer's been through for 2 years? The rigors of having to support a family, to deal with the scrutiny internally and externally for something that the officer did that was 100% reasonable by all accounts, not my decision, the court's decision, 100% exonerated. And all of this because of just the simple components of you know, video review and examination, understanding performance issues, understanding that the video is going to show things to the reviewer that the officer did not see or comprehend at the time, because we have the benefit of play, pause, fast forward, rewind, watch it again. In the courtroom, in that case, we watched that video 57 times. Wow. And you want to hold an officer it's unethical standard of perfection on that video when it was a nothing call, Klee. This was nothing. All he wanted to do was to get this guy the help that he needed. And he did that. He did it and did it well with no injury to anyone. And it turns out in it being a criminal trial because a DA had an agenda and somebody internally didn't understand these very simple components. It's time to know what you don't know. This video component that we're dealing with in every department across this country is perplexing investigators, and it should not be. And I understand it, right? We can't automatically know these things. Get the training. If you don't get it from me, get it from somewhere. Get that training and understand what it is and how these things affect the investigation and the decisions and conclusions that come from it. It's very important, extremely important. And Von Klein, using your last name, Von Klein, a very good friend of mine, brother at arms, and making major shifts and changes in law enforcement. And there's those of us that will not relent. And every time we hit the stone, it might spark, we might knock a piece off, but we ain't stopping, right? We're chipping away at this stone to try to explain and educate. And I cannot stress that enough. You're doing it. Danny King is doing it. I'm doing it. There's a multitude of people. Scott Savage. There's a number of training companies out there that have good, solid training. I will also warn you to vet the training before you go through the training. Make sure that the individuals that are providing the training have the experience, not simply just on the academic side, but academically, experientially, out on the street, living through it, applying it, succeeding, failing, representing, teaching it to people. These are the experts that are out trying to make a change in this world. We've got to keep chipping away at the stone, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I applaud and appreciate everything you're doing. The amount of information here that you're sharing and the excitement, you can hear the passion coming out in your voice, is much needed. And chipping away at the stone is much needed, getting that information out there and showing the education along with it, like you just said.
Yeah, it is. And don't forget that in this job, remember, you're a human being. To the officers out there, you're not a machine. You're not expected to make mechanical decisions. You're not able to make mechanical decisions. You're going to make decisions based on the context and the perceptions that you are experiencing in the moment. Remember, our officers out there, they don't experience the distortions. They experience the event. We find the distortions in hindsight. And that becomes an issue of fact, right? Something that wasn't remembered, something that wasn't seen because of focus of attention and all of the different components of the visual system that are gathering data for interpretation, not storage. Those are important things that our officers have to remember. And then write the report from a human standpoint. You're a human dealing with humans. That's a very important component of what we're doing. That's the component that Graham versus Connor was foundationalized on, was the fact that human beings don't have the ability to make decisions in a split second to be judged by what they didn't know, right? They can only make decisions based on what they reasonably believed in that moment. And think about that for a minute, because we have those in the form of experts and investigators that will go through the case using the Graham standard to say that the officer should have or could have, or that they were trained so they would have. And all of those are a subjective component in an objective with an objective goal, and it doesn't work. This is counterfactual reasoning. The officer did not do that. So to say that they should have or would have or could have doesn't make what they did unreasonable. And that's got to be at the forefront of this whole thing. What the officer did made sense to them in the moment. Let's figure out why. That's going to be pinned and very... it's going to be dependent upon the officer's account of that event. And I know there's jurisdictions where officers aren't giving statements. I would say that less is not more, but that's a cultural issue. If the department has a history of hanging officers using that statement or information from their perspective because they're misinterpreting that information, the officers aren't going to speak. And now we end up in this swirling cesspool of incomplete data that we cannot use moving forward. And I would beg officers and your representation, don't reconcile those things that weren't part of your decision-making process. Identify them and be strong about it. Live with that and understand that there's going to be inaccuracies. It's the nature of what we do as human beings. Accept those inaccuracies and reconcile them as they are needed to be, not to make an excuse for them. Reconcile them in this way. I see in the video that this occurred. I don't remember that happening. That's okay. That's 100% human. And those individuals out there conducting the investigations that are worth their salt are going to understand that it's not going to align. At least when they leave my class, they're going to understand. And it's not going to make it right or wrong, but it's going to give a better understanding and a more solid foundation to make those decisions moving forward in the case. Because the initial investigation is just that. It's not done. It's only just beginning. What we leave on the table there stays on the table and deteriorates rapidly. We've got to gather that data through any source that we can. And for crying out loud, take measurements. I've had multiple cases lately where they're not taking measurements. And when we look at distortions, we're dealing with four components: time, distance, speed, and motion. The video distorts time, distance, speed, and motion. The mind distorts time, distance, speed, and motion when we find those distortions in hindsight. Well, now those components start to collide and we've got to be complete. Otherwise, we get lost in that incomplete data. It's very, very, very damaging to these cases. So those would be my recommendations, Klee.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing. Absolutely. Wonderful. You're giving good information.
You're like, I stopped taking notes. I can't even keep up.
I don't even want to interview. I just want to sit here and listen and learn and take notes.
Yeah. And then, you know, here's the thing. I mean, I don't want to say I'm a geek in this stuff, but I am ultra committed to the point where I literally have to cut time out to get to the other half of my brain, which is the music side of my brain. And I spend a lot of time in my studio here recording, practicing. In fact, I turn practice sessions into experiments or study sessions to figure out how long it takes me to learn how to do something new as a drummer with drumsticks in my hand for 180,000 hours. It still takes me time to learn something new. So let's equate that to an officer that doesn't have the time to condition with drawing from a level two holster, and then they switch to a level three holster. Yeah. That's a death sentence, right? The conditioning aspect of that has got to be there. We have to develop that hands-on heuristic, remembering that we've got to be good at that to a performance level, not to a qualification level. Right. Michael Jordan said this, I think. Pro athletes that are, let's say, semi-pro at the college level, many of those athletes that stay at the college level practice until they get it right. Pro athletes practice until they cannot get it wrong. Mm. And I want you to think about the strength of that statement. I've had a deadly threat face me off, and I've drawn my weapon and not remembered it. That's because I conditioned that to the point where I couldn't get it wrong. So it was no longer part of my thought process. As soon as I start thinking about drawing that weapon, what am I not thinking about? I'm not focused on the threat. I'm not assessing behavior. I'm thinking about why I cannot get my weapon out of this three levels of retention when I just did it at qualification. Yeah. There's two different contexts there. Qualification is to beat a buzzer. Performance is to save your life. You cannot practice to get it right. You have got to condition to where you cannot get it wrong. And officers, please understand that that's an important component of what we do. Don't do it with your firearm. Get a blue gun. Put it in your locker. When you put on your gun belt, your Sam Brown, take that blue gun, put it in your holster, and draw it five times before every shift without tugging on it, without looking to put it away. At the end of a month, you've drawn it 200 times. At the end of a year, 2,000 or more. And you've become competent in drawing that weapon. I guarantee you that will drive that behavior into a level of automaticity that will serve you well when you are required to perform. So, and this job, you may never be called to the stage, and I hope you aren't. But when you are, you need to be able to perform at a Michael Jordan level of performance, not a college level basketball player or a high school level basketball player that thinks they are good enough to compete. You're not good enough to compete. I will tell you that right now, unless you condition. Be aware of it. Think about it. I understand you've got families and other things going on, but find those micro moments to condition yourself to be good at the behavior.
Man, I'm speechless. Hey, wonderful. I like the idea of the blue gun and how many, just five exchanges, how that adds up through a shift, through a week, through a month, and through a year. It reminded
right.
me.
Right. And I would recommend, you know, to our detectives, Clee, if they were changing weapon system, do the same thing, but do it 25 times. If you're going from an under the jacket holster to a street rig, draw that weapon 25 times to re-engage with that muscle motor memory establishment. If you can do that 25 times without tugging on the weapon, you're going to be in pretty good shape. Yeah. If you tug on it, do it again. It might take 2 to 4 minutes, but is that time worth the level of performance that is required in a split second scenario where that gun, unfortunately, is your lifeline?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, we want to defend ourselves and save our own lives. The public, when they call us, they're expected to have a rock star show up. They're expected to have a superhero show up. So, I mean, not only for us, but for them as well.
That's right. And I was on a discussion this morning with a couple of individuals, and one from Lieutenant Colonel Grossman, and talking about these things. They're talking about the difference between the acceptable language of a warrior and a guardian. And I'll tell you, our officers out there that are operating in this environment today, in this climate, under this scrutiny, combine the guardian and the warrior and be a hero, right? The term that we're looking for is not reckless. Don't be a hero in that term, but combine that guardian mindset with the warrior mindset and understand that you're going to have to make tough decisions where the consequences of life and death might face you. And that's the opportunity to be a combination of a guardian and a warrior, which is a hero. And that's Grossman's words, not mine. And I agree with him.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that as well. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're going to pause for the calls. Well, again, starting to be safe, has a few words to say, and we're going to jump right back. I got a special surprise and caveat that I learned moments before we went live, and we're going to kind of shift gears and discuss and talk about that as well. So stand by. We'll be right back.
Service has been temporarily disconnected.
Psst. Hey, Megan. You need those pills to help you feel better. Treacherous Tony can help you.
Megan, no! Don't listen to him! It's dangerous!
Oh no.
Hey there, sweetheart. Looking for something special?
I've got this strange feeling something's not right. Captain Chaos, come on. We need to go investigate.
Investigate? But I just bought a new yo-yo.
Oh my goodness. I just don't get it. Hold it right there, Treacherous Tony. We know what you're up to.
And we won't let you harm innocent people.
You can't stop me. I've got connections.
We're not afraid of your connections, Tony. We're here to protect the community.
And make sure Megan gets the help she needs legally.
Thank you, officers.
You are absolutely welcome, Megan. Remember, folks, there's legal ways to get the help that you need. Don't let anyone take advantage of you.
And if you ever need a helping hand, Sergeant B-Safe and Captain Chaos are here to save the day.
And that's your tip of the day to get you on your way.
Starting to be safe and Captain Chaos saved the day again. Me kind of flip this around and I was able to see if I can get it.
Back. Oh boy. What are you about to do?
Here we go. See if I can turn this up a little bit. You guys hear this in the background? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, let me turn this up a little bit more. You guys are in for a treat right here. This is something that what I learned about Jamie here moments after he called me and reminded me that I scheduled him wrong and we were supposed to go live today, and I'm glad he did. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting right here right now. This right here, Jamie, can you tell us a little bit about this song?
Yeah. So I recorded that song for my wife. I played drums and sang on that song and ended up singing 13 songs on the record Between Two Hats. So yeah, that's my other side, brother.
So tell us about your other side. You've been a musician for how long, and who have you toured with, and where has that part of the career taken you?
Yeah. So I've been a working musician since I was 14, 15 ish. And, toured. I own the group Phoenix, which headlines all over. It's the guitar player. When we first started Phoenix, it was the guitar player from the group Aerosmith, the violinist from the supergroup Kansas, and some other big names and people that have kind of where they now group. But they're still performing. I still own the band. And they're headlining on Royal Caribbean ships and all over Vegas in the big showroom. So, yeah, it's been a great run for me. You know, I discovered that I had a little bit of a singing voice and ended up recording some of this music, which, by the way, is a charity project. So all of the proceeds from anything that comes from these projects, I'm working on my second record now,
nice.
goes to law enforcement, and primarily health and wellness. So it's been a great thing, man. An opportunity to give back and, At the moment I discovered I could sing, I started really trying to push for that, and I couldn't get out of the studio. I just kept recording because I felt like I could fly. I'm like, oh man, I'm singing, and it's not in the shower.
So how therapeutic is that for you?
Well, like I said, it's the other half of my, it's my, my evil twin, if you will, or, or vice versa, the twin to my evil twin. But it's, you know, I jump in on my kit, on my drum set, and I'll practice for 2 or 3 hours in between, you know, working on reports. I'll just pick up sticks and start banging away, working on drum solos and just having fun with it, man. I'm at the age now where I don't rely on it financially. Anything I make goes to charity. And I just have a very deep level of gratification being involved in these projects and running the band, making sure my band is making a fruitful living. And yeah, man, I just, it has everything to do with my sanity.
Yeah. 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 So ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, what's your YouTube page for that? Can you share that with us as well?
If you search Jamie Borden on YouTube, you'll find all kinds of stuff. But I'll tell you this, don't dig too deep because you will see shit you can't unsee. So I lived through the 90s. I was a rock star in the 90s. I had long flowing hair, wearing suspenders, pouty lips, a little bit of blush. I ain't going to lie. I present very different then than I do now. But yeah, so I've got a channel on YouTube primarily for the music release so that I can, you know, get the information out for people to download these tunes. And that's the only way I can give back is if people buy into it. So that's what I got. Just search Jamie Borden on YouTube and you'll run into all kinds of stuff.
Gotcha. And giving back is important. Again, I know we stress it a lot. It's one of the hot topics on this platform is life after retirement. And you're showing you're busy, like you said, you're busier now than you were when you were a working sergeant. You were very busy as being a working sergeant. So I commend you. I commend Danny, who is on here as well. And he tried to get his comment back up here. Because one of the things that you said backstage was, does Jamie have any workout tips? And you prioritized your health, like you said, very recently, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, where you understand health is wealth and you know that can't get anything done throughout the day or the course of your life if you're not taking care of yourself. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So when I was working, I needed to be strong. I needed to be attentive. I needed to, you know, be able to be an example for those younger folks that were going through the academy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the age of, you know, 50, 52, I'm out running with the academy and these, you know, the 20 and 22 year olds that are starting to give up. And, I would make the point that, hey, listen, if I'm going to do it, you're going to do it and we'll get through it together kind of thing. A little bit more gruff than that. Aggressively helpful, if you will. But when I retired and I became inundated with cases, mm-hmm. and getting busy with the group, I was still playing and performing at night with the group. And, I started to secede from the performance aspect and I found myself working from sun up to sundown at my desk and I gained a ton of weight. I was on a cane. I literally could barely walk. Wow. I've lost since about 45 pounds in the last year and a half. Mm-hmm. And but here's the big issue with that is that I realized that I wasn't helpful to anyone if I took myself off the priority list. So, you know, my regimen is it's very consistent. And here's the thing. I don't work out a lot. I work out a lot. So I focus on things like, you know, meditation in the morning. The first 2 hours of every day are dedicated to me. And that's just my mantra. I don't look at my phone. I don't open email. I don't do anything that has to do with work for the first 2 hours of the day. That's all about me meditating. It's, mm-hmm. You know, there's, it's just a mindset. And, so staying engaged with that mindset and committing to yourself is the only way to stay healthy. The only way I'm helpful to anyone in this career is that it is knowing that I've got the mental capacity and physical capacity to do what I need to do. Walking the podium, for 8 hours a day, 4 days a week is not an easy task. And I needed to be able to do that. And I'm, you know, I'm normally the only instructor on my classes and I've got to commit to it. So, yeah, it's important. So to the folks out there on the road, especially, stay healthy, keep yourself on the priority list. To those that are going into retirement, put that as your top priority and cut time out for yourself, no matter when it is, first thing in the morning, last thing at night. Just keep yourself on that priority list. Doesn't have to be every day, but it does have to be consistent.
Right. Like that. Just like they say when you're boarding a plane, you know, if in the event of emergency, make sure you apply your mask first, that before you start helping other people. Because if you don't apply yours, then you'll pass out, then you're no good, and then you need help yourself.
And here's what I recognized, and I was teaching with Dr. Paul Taylor. Mm-hmm. I pulled up to the venue and I got out of the truck and I got my cane out and I'm hobbling into the classroom, and it dawned on me that this is not who I am. And it changed that day. That day I thought, I can't, this is not beneficial to anyone. And I was not long for the earth at that point. It felt like, you know what I mean? Those are things that, I need for everybody out there that's interested in continuing in health and retirement, in health on the job. Keep yourself on the priority list. That's it. That's all you can do.
Gotcha. Jamie, I had a great time sitting here learning from you because I haven't interviewed you at all. I was sitting here investing and divesting everything that you were sharing with us. Through the course of conversation, I may have forgot to ask some questions, or I may have jogged your memory on things that you wanted to cover. Is there anything else that you would like to share with us right now? The floor is yours.
You know, not really, man. I just, you know, I'm honored to be here. Thank you for, you know, putting this whole thing together, and being flexible, because my schedule isn't exactly the most flexible thing. And I really, really do appreciate that. For the listeners out there, find training, find good training. There's a lot of good training out there. There's a lot of experienced people teaching. And the only way you're going to know what you don't know is to learn what you don't know. And I would also give this little bit of advice. If you go into a class, go in with questions. Don't go in with the expectation that the instructor is going to give you the golden egg of information that's going to change your life. If you go into an instructive environment and you don't have questions, the chances are you're not going to learn anything that has to do with the answers. Focus on those things that are questionable that you don't know. Figure out what it is that you don't know. Write down questions. And if the instructors don't directly answer those questions, then ask them to answer them. This is your point in learning, right? And I know a lot of police officers, they'll show up in a class and just expect to be given light. And it doesn't work like that. When I became an instructor for Force Science, I got the advanced specialist certification, and I was asked shortly thereafter to be an instructor. I went through that certification course probably 6 to 8 times and still had questions that I would answer on my own. I would research and study. I had to be foundational with my knowledge to be able to give that knowledge to others. As a student, develop questions and identify what it is that you think you don't know in these cases. It's easy to know what you know, but it's very difficult to identify what you don't know. So please ask questions and you know, continue your pathway forward through curiosity. That's the only way you're going to be effective at anything, is to be curious about everything. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I spend 2 to 3 hours researching every day. I've been doing this full time for 15 years, and I'm never, ever at the end of the tunnel. The light only, I can see it, but it's still a pin, right? It's still a pin light. And you've got to be curious about this stuff. That's what makes it exciting, is learning, the learning aspect and the application aspect and the regurgitation of that information to those who don't know. It's all very exciting, and I'm very passionate about that. Get training. Come to my classes, find the other training out there that is viable training with experts. Force Science has got great classes. Savage has got some great training classes out there. And if it's, find what you can afford and put yourself in them. Mm-hmm. These instructors care. The instructors I'm talking about today care about what it is that they're teaching. And those are the people you need to be learning from.
And like you started off the interview saying, we got into this job to, you're expected to get better. You're expected to get training. You're expected to have to put yourself out there, get some skin in the game and get some training. And that's exactly what you're conveying to us.
That's right. And I'll tell you, Danny King, as an example, and myself, if we couldn't get training from the department, we would pay for it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's an investment in who you are, in what you are. And those are important things. Don't take the training to take a break. Take the training to learn and understand how important learning is and how complex learning is. Remember that I leave classes with more questions than answers. And that is the golden egg, right? If you leave with questions, you're going to do everything you can to satisfy those questions. Get them satisfied. You will be surprised at how effective you become when you get the answers that you're looking for. But if you don't start with answers, the questions are just information. Exposure to information is not wisdom. Application of information is wisdom. So build wisdom. Don't collect data. Build wisdom.
Look at that. Perfect. Matt Bloodgood, former guest on the show. Excellent points on asking questions. Be curious. Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. Another brother at arms. Thanks for being here, Matt. I appreciate you.
Likewise. Jamie, I had a great time with you. And again, you're more than welcome to come back on the show. I appreciate you. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we had a tremendous show. If you guys have any questions, make sure you get them in now. If you don't get them in now, make sure you still put them on there and we'll address them during the replay. I'll make sure that if Jamie doesn't see him, I'll text him and let him know that he's got a good question up there where he can address if it's for him. If not for me, then either way. Matt Bloodgood, we have active law enforcement needs guys training there in their class. It's transformational and needed to improve the profession. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thanks, Matt.
Yep.
Very good. Well, thank you for the opportunity, Clee. It's been an outstanding evening for me. I hope your listeners got something out of it. You know, contact me through Critical Incident Review. This is the beginning of our relationship, not the end. And I'm truly looking forward to more interactions with you, Clee, and your listenership. Thanks for everything.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. We had a great time. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Black and Blue, where we go live weekly at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And when we go live, like tonight, we had a tremendous show, and we got barn burners coming for the remainder of or starting a whole new month next month. March is going to be March Madness. We're going to have a lot of fun. Tune in 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on these five different platforms. Get your questions ready. It's going to be interactive. It's Black and Blue, where we interview those first responders and law enforcement, whether they're rookies, seasoned, or retirees, or they're training, the experiences and publication. I'm Coach Clee. I'm your motivation speaker, your empowerment coach, your author, and your favorite baker, saying 10-4 over and out. Take care of each other. We love you. Have a good night. Let me get these banners up here. Ah, here we go.
Captain Chaos, did you mess up another report again?
Sorry, Sergeant B-Safe. I'll try to be more, careful.
What in the world was that? Whoa, look out the window, Captain Chaos. There's a real live superhero.
We have to meet them, Sergeant B-Safe. Let's go.
There's Super Crime Buster to the rescue.
Hey, there's Super Crime Buster! Woohoo!
Hey, you're the greatest, Super Crime Buster.
Yeah, we know Super Crime Buster's out there. We're actually on the way, but we keep getting phone calls. Excuse me, Super Crime Buster. I'm Sergeant B-Safe, and this is my partner, Captain Chaos. We'd like to thank you for your incredible bravery.
Yeah, you're amazing. We're big fans.
Wait. You are the police officers, but not the superheroes?
No, we're just ordinary officers doing our duty.
But we may not have superpowers, but we're heroes in our own way.
You're right! The heroes don't always wear capes or possess superhuman abilities. It's the everyday heroes like you who make a difference.
Thank you, Super Crime Buster, for that reminder. You are absolutely 100% correct. To all the first responders,
and law enforcement officers. Take it from me and Captain Chaos. We applaud you. We know you do a thankless job and are highly needed. You are a superhero in your own right. Keep up the good work in these perilous times because you are needed. Wouldn't you agree, Kraken? And that's your tip of the day to get you on your way.
Simple if the problem was bad cops. It ain't.